Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, June 28, 2023. Sudan's military leader declares a unilateral ceasefire.
The ongoing conspiracy against our country demands vigilance and readiness to defend the threat against the country.
And South Sudan's vice president says the country cannot survive without the support of the United States.
The relation between our two friendly countries, that is U.S. and South Sudan, may have deteriorated, but we should never allow them to continue in the wrong direction.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Sudanese military commander has repeated a call on the young Sudanese and Sudanese to join the fight against the rapid support forces. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan also announced a 24-hour ceasefire Wednesday to honor the Muslim Eid of al-Adha. Some residents of Darfur say the attacks on civilians and the looting of their property continue in the area. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
During his Eid al-Adha address broadcasted on the state-owned TV Tuesday, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan announced a unilateral 24-hour ceasefire to allow the Sudanese enjoy Eid al-Adha festivities. He says his forces will continue to fight against what he termed as betrayal of the nation and restore stability in the country. Al-Burhan accused the rapid support forces of allegedly violating the rights of civilians in Khartoum, Darfur, and other parts of Sudan.
This outlawed group violates rights, attacks civilians in their houses, and uses them for their operations. They looted the property of civilians and destroyed the country's infrastructure and services. Up to today, they continue to kill, loot, and destroy property of the people.
The commander of the Sudan Armed Forces called on the country's youth to join the army and defend their nation against what he called internal and external conspiracies.
The ongoing conspiracy against our country demands vigilance and readiness to defend the threat against the country. Therefore, we ask all the youth of my country and all those who are capable of defending themselves not to hesitate or delay in fulfilling this national duty in their respective communities or by joining the military units.
General Burhan says the youth will be honored for safeguarding the Sudanese sovereignty. The head of the paramilitary rapid support forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, announced a 48-hour ceasefire effective Tuesday to allow Sudanese to celebrate Eid al-Adha. General Dagalo said his forces would remain in their positions and fight in self-defense if attacked during the truce period. He noted that his forces are committed to end the fighting and suffering of civilians.
My wish is that these days will be used for a genuine forgiveness and reconciliation among our people. We have a deep feeling of our people who are suffering and going through harsh humanitarian situations due to the ongoing fighting, which has affected their livelihoods. We are determined to end this war, hopefully strong and united once again.
The RSF commander says he is concerned about reports of human rights abuses committed by his forces against civilians. He announced the establishment of field courts headed by the Major General Essam Saleh Fidel to investigate the claims of abuses allegedly committed by the RSF. Sudanese activist Asad Al-Tahir, who spoke to South Sudan in Focus from Niala town in South Darfur state, downplayed the announcement of the ceasefire by both warring parties. Al-Tahir says many Sudanese are displaced within the country or have crossed the border to the neighboring Central Africa, Chad, and South Sudan. He says few residents of Niala town who did not cross into Chad are living under harsh conditions.
Most of the civilians were depending on the monthly salary, and even those who used to depend on the daily casual work income are now sitting idle. People are unable to provide for their needs because they don't have money.
UN says 2.5 million people have been displaced within and outside Sudan since the onset of the conflict on April 15th. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's vice president in charge of government service cluster, Hussein Abdelbaghi Akol, says his government needs the support of the United States to implement the 2018 peace deal. For VOA News, Manyang, David Mayar reports from Juba.
In speaking at an occasion organized by the U.S. Embassy in Juba on Tuesday, Vice President Hussein Abdelbaghi Akol said the United States is a longtime friend of the people of South Sudan. Akol says that friendship is facing some challenges.
The relation between our two friendly countries, that is U.S. and South Sudan, may have deteriorated. But we should never allow them to continue in the wrong direction. It is for this reason that His Excellency President Salva Kiir Mayardit, the President of Republic of South Sudan, and Government of National Unity have been making effort to reset and realize our relation with U.S. government and people so that we do not lose track of friendship.
Akol, who addressed the UN General Assembly last year, says he also met U.S. officials during his tour of Washington.
Upon the arrival, I briefed His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit, the President of the Republic of South Sudan, fully on what our American friends expect of us based on our meetings in New York and Washington, D.C. And he started taking action immediately on some issues because he is willing to do whatever it takes to revive South Sudan-U.S. relations.
Michael J. Idler, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, says the Biden administration is committed to helping South Sudan become a successful democratic country.
My wish for the South Sudanese people is that they succeed through the achievement of peace commitments and actions beyond the end of the transitional period to establish a stable, prosperous, and peaceful democracy that is a partner of the United States and of all other fellow democracies. To echo Justice Marshall's words, may the South Sudanese people make it, protect it, and pass it on.
Akol says the role played by the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway, which led to the signing of the 2018 peace agreement, is still fresh in the minds of the country's leaders.
It makes sense that you do not leave us now. That crossroad before the completion of the implementation of the 2018 Accord. We need your help to complete and the provision of the privatized peace agreement of the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. South Sudan needs support in disarmament and in the upcoming 2024 general election.
Ambassador Adela says the Biden administration, through the United States Agency for International Development, invested over $1 billion U.S. dollars last year in humanitarian assistance. He says the U.S. government will continue to donate money to avert humanitarian crisis in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Manyang David Mayor in Juba.
Authorities in South Sudan say access to education remains a major challenge for girls in the country. An officer with the UN Children's Agency says South Sudan government has accepted to develop a policy for encouraging women to become teachers. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng has more from Juba.
Statistics from South Sudan's Ministry of General Education and Instruction indicate that only 47% of girls are enrolled in the various levels of education, compared to boys who constitute 53% of learners in the country. Meline Christine Lemi is an education officer with the UNICEF in South Sudan. She says the UN Children's Agency is working with the government of South Sudan to address gender gap in the education sector.
Hopefully in the long run, more females will be attracted to the teaching profession and provide mentorship in schools and also act as role models to girls in schools, which will also improve the enrollment, retention, and completion rates for girls. Other interventions also include the national advocacy on the importance of girls' education across the country, and one of these is a Back to Learning campaign.
Lemi says limited number of trained teachers and the language of an instruction has hindered girls from accessing equal education opportunities across the country. South Sudan's government and aid agencies launched a $40 million US multi-year resilient program to address education crisis in the country. Awud Dengachuil, South Sudan Minister of General Education and Instruction, says our ministry is working on promoting equal and quality education to children across South Sudan.
When I came into office, I issued several ministerial orders, among which include one that allow pregnant and young mothers to study and sit for their examination. This has enabled the young mothers to complete their primary and secondary education and be able to transition to the next level of their education.
Yasmin Sharif, the executive director of a non-profit called Education Cannot Wait, says years of conflict and forced displacement compounded by climate-induced disasters have impacted provision of quality education across South Sudan.
I had the privilege and the honor to meet with the Honorable His Excellency President Salva Kiir. And all that His Excellency, the President Salva Kiir, spoke of was the right and importance of girls' education. No more child marriages, no more unwanted pregnancies. We want girls' boarding schools. Bring the girls back to school.
Sharif says her office 3-year program aims to provide holistic education to 135,000 children, youth, refugees, and returnees who are affected by crisis. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some Sudanese who fled the conflict in Khartoum say they are feeling homesick in Juba on this Eid al-Adha. Stay tuned for that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is wealth an important factor when making marriage decisions?
Wealth is not an important factor when making marriage decisions, because most wealth is best acquired when you're together as a couple.
Of course, I think that any decision that involves another person, that's only fair to include wealth as an important thing. Like, I can live on almost no money, but I couldn't expect my wife or my children to.
Not wealth, but security, financial security. Because if you're planning to have kids, then you need to provide for them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some Sudanese nationals living in South Sudan's capital, Juba, say celebrating Eid al-Adha without their families and friends is difficult. Some of the Sudanese who spoke to VOA say this is their first time to celebrate Eid al-Adha away from home due to the ongoing conflict in Sudan. For VOA News, Viola Elias spoke to some South Sudanese who have stayed in Juba for some time. And reports.
Al-Sali Muhammad Adam, who arrived in Juba 4 days ago after fleeing conflict in Sudan, says he feels heartbroken to celebrate Eid al-Adha far from home. Adam says he finds it hard to celebrate Eid in another country where he has no friends or relatives.
I am saddened that this is the first time in my life celebrating this feast in this difficult situation, but we still remain hopeful for a better solution to the conflict in our country. I wish a safe return to all those who are separated from their families and healing for those who are wounded.
Adam says he hopes the rivals' parties to the conflict in Sudan will restore peace and security to allow displaced Sudanese return home. Muhammad Issa, another Sudanese national who lives in Juba, says there is no mood of Eid al-Adha in Juba. He urges the Sudanese communities in Juba to pray for peace and security in Sudan during this festival marking Eid al-Adha.
We are wishing peace for our families and nothing more than that. And during this festivity, one has to be happy, even though inside us we are suffering. But with this celebration, one has to be happy and in good health.
Most of the Sudanese who spoke to VOA in Juba expressed nostalgia. Abdul Saleh is another Sudanese who has lived in Juba for 2 years. He says he worries about the future of Sudan.
This Eid al-Adha is good, but we are worried about relatives who are in the fighting areas in Sudan. We wish them safety and hope we will reunite one day.
This year and even the previous year, high prices and the instability of the citizens to buy sacrifices prevent many Muslims in Sudan and South Sudan to enjoy festivities that comes with Eid. Abdul Hamid Sadiq, who lives in Juba, says the Sudanese conflict has separated him from his family.
I wish my Sudanese community an opportunity to be able to communicate with their children and have access to food and water. We are suffering. For more than 2 months now, we have lost contact with some of our relatives due to a bad network and people have separated.
Muslims across the world celebrate Eid al-Adha annually. It marks the annual pilgrimage to Mecca and the commemoration of the sacrifice of Abraham. It is celebrated by sharing of food, sweets, and meat. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Nigeria, where plans by United Nations Agency to... Sorry, we moved to Uganda, where plans by the United Nations Refugee Agency to cut food from July 1st for refugees in Uganda, Africa's biggest refugee host, are expected to worsen the struggle with food shortages from climate change. The UN's food program said aid cuts leave them with no choice but to help only the most vulnerable. Halima Athumani reports from Palurinya refugee camp in Obongi district, Uganda.
In Uganda's Palurinya refugee camp, gardens are filled with corn, but there will be little to harvest. Father of nine, Eid Alfred, says in the past his garden yielded 2 bags of corn. But with the prolonged drought this year, he expects nothing.
When you look at these crops, they are not drought resistant. They need constant rain for a good harvest. Without rain, I won't get anything. They will die completely.
The UN's refugee agency says Uganda is home to more than 1.5 million refugees and asylum seekers, making it the largest host in Africa. Uganda's government provides each family with a 9 by 9 meter plot for a house and a small garden. But it's not enough to survive for refugee families like mother of five, Naima Pomi, who treks to the border with South Sudan to buy food.
The food is very little. My children is now growing. They're eating too much. If they don't know food, food is not enough.
The UN says it has only received 27% of the funding needed for refugees in Uganda, so it has been forced to switch for the first time to targeted assistance from July 1st. Households considered most vulnerable, such as those headed by women or the chronically ill, will receive 60% of the recommended monthly food ration. Other refugees will get just 30%. The World Food Programme's Deputy Director for Uganda, Marcus Pryor, says officials will keep a close watch for serious negative impacts from the food cuts.
We'll look at things like people's food consumption, we'll look at malnutrition rates, we'll look at the kind of survival strategies that refugees resort to if they are in difficulties. And this will allow us to take our case to those who support the World Food Programme and the refugee response more broadly.
Refugee leader Kenyi Moses says he is already seeing an impact from the drought and food aid cuts. Some refugees are leaving.
Most of our households right now, they were only left in the hands of younger children. Most of our people have gone back to South Sudan. And very well, when he knew the situation is not all that favoring, these children alone, as they being assured, and they cannot take their family.
The World Food Programme in Uganda says it needs at least $64 million to support the refugees until the end of the year. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Palorinya Refugee Camp in Obongi District, Uganda.
From Uganda, we move to Nigeria, where UN agencies are warning that food security and nutrition crisis in northeast Nigeria has reached an alarming new heights, and swift global action is needed to head off a catastrophic outcome, with donations slow to roll in. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Humanitarian Coordinator in Nigeria, Matthias Schmal, last briefed international donors a year ago on the critical situation in northeast Nigeria. Since then, he says, conditions have worsened for millions of people in Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe states. He says the number of people facing severe hunger has risen to 4.3 million, with more than 500,000 on the verge of famine. He says the number of children under five suffering from severe acute malnutrition has doubled to 700,000 this year compared to 2022.
Mind that this crisis is primarily the result of years of protracted conflict. We're in the 13th year of a non-international armed conflict, and the insecurity that comes with a conflict that continues to prevent many people from farming or earning their own income.
Schmal says conditions will be particularly difficult for people in northeast Nigeria during the peak of the lean season from June to August. He says the UN needs to raise $396 million to help 2.8 million people over the next 6 months. The World Food Program reports 4.3 million people need food assistance in northeast Nigeria. However, WFP country director in Nigeria, David Stevenson, says money is so tight, the UN will be unable to assist 1.5 million of these people, though they too are needy.
And those were hard choices of prioritization based on those that are most affected by the conflict, those that are most affected by the floods and inflation. So there's been a very significant prioritization, and already we have people coming to our offices saying, you know, they're hungry, they're extremely hungry, and people appealing on their behalf, and we're turning them away.
The $396 million six-month lean season plan is limited in scope. It is only meant to tide people over through the critical lean season when food stocks are at their lowest. The scheme accounts for only a small portion of the UN's 2023 overall $1.3 billion humanitarian response plan for northeast Nigeria. While half the year has gone by, humanitarian officials working in the region note only 25% of what they need for their life-saving operations has been funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move back to the United States, where former U.S. President Donald Trump is campaigning to return to the White House, vowing to oust the current leader who defeated him in the 2020 elections, President Joe Biden. But first, Trump would need to vanquish a growing number of Republicans who are also running for the presidency. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Harmon at the White House reports the large field of primary campaign opponents is playing to Trump's advantage, as most of them are reluctant to attack the former president.
Surveys of likely Republican voters show Donald Trump with a wide lead over the other declared primary challengers, including the two most prominent, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Trump's former vice president, Mike Pence. Trump remains defiant despite becoming the first sitting or former U.S. president to face federal criminal charges.
Rob DeSanctimonious and his poll numbers are dropping like a rock.
Political strategist and veteran of five Republican presidential campaigns, Stuart Stevens, is not surprised by Trump's strong lead.
This is Trump's party, and I don't see any reason to believe that this legal issues that he has is changing that. I think in many ways it's solidifying it. I think he's successfully portrayed himself as a victim.
The newest entrant in the Republican field is former Congressman Will Hurd of Texas.
And if we nominate a lawless, selfish, failed politician like Donald Trump, who lost the House, the Senate, and the White House, we all know Joe Biden will win again.
Few of the other Republicans running are as openly critical of Trump. An exception, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
And Donald Trump made us smaller by dividing us even further.
With the notable exception of Pence, many in the race are likely auditioning as Trump's potential running mate or using this primary season as a warm-up for 2028. Like Miami Mayor Francis Suarez, they target President Biden and Democrats for criticism, not Donald Trump.
Under this administration, America is again beginning to doubt herself.
Whatever their motivations, there is a calculated reason for most candidates' cautious approach to Trump, according to Stevens, who says he has left the Republican Party.
If you're defined against Joe Biden, that's a good thing in a Republican primary. But I also think that history has shown that when you attack Donald Trump, he attacks back pretty hard. And I don't think maybe Chris Christie's an exception, but I don't think the rest of them are looking to get into a street fight with Donald Trump.
For voters, their first opportunity to assess many of those running for president will come when the candidates directly confront each other in the same room on August 23rd. That's when the Republican Party has scheduled its initial debate of the primary season. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, June 28. We now leave you with Musa Juma and the song New Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Cornelius, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Joseph Lacombe, General Joseph Lacombe.